Getting ready to get into week four. It started last night with the Cowboys and Giants in a rather odd game. The Cowboys won 20-15. Aubrey missing that field goal helped a lot of people, hurt a lot of people. Bill Barnwell loves the NFL and writes prolifically about the NFL. Love having him on the show, and he joins us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline, at Bill Barnwell. Of course, he covers the NFL for ESPN. Before we get into Washington, I wanted to just, first of all, compliment you on a lot of your stories. I love reading you, but the dual threat quarterback story from a couple of weeks ago was actually one that I've been waiting for. I was surprised that you hadn't written something like this before, but I guess with passing yards being down, that may have been the reason for getting to it. But for those that didn't read it, what are your big takeaways from this era, which kind of started in 2012-ish, maybe Cam Newton in 2011, where, you know, we've got more college football and more dual threat quarterbacking into the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, it is really something I think that has become ubiquitous and something I think we sort of take for granted now. I mean, you know, if you go back 30, 40 years, you were getting one player a decade who was a dual threat at quarterback where he might be a threat to run with the football. You know, you go back to Randall Cunningham, which would have been right when I was first becoming aware of football. You know, there was one Randall Cunningham and nobody else like him. In the NFL, there was one Michael Vick and nobody else like Michael Vick. In recent years, like you said, we've had Cam pop up. But really, I go back to the class of 2018 and Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen, two very different quarterbacks with different bodies. They run differently, but they're essential parts of the league now. And Lamar Jackson's a two-time MVP. Josh Allen, obviously, at this point, the favorite to win MVP. We're still early days, but he's been the best player in football so far this year. And when I looked around the NFL, Kevin, I saw, you know, in week one, eight different quarterbacks who were involved, not just as scramblers, not just like a Fran Tarkenton right, where you're going to extend the play, but like they're dialing up run plays for you in the offense. Like there's quarterback power. They're running veer. They're running bass. They're running the stuff, you know, where it's not just even zone read, like a Robert Griffin offense. Like they're running stuff where you know you're getting the football as the quarterback, not just in short yardage, not just as a gimmick, but like a fundamental part of the offense, not only to have you carry the ball because you're good at it, but to change the numbers on defense, slow down linebackers, slow down edge rushers, get your running back-led run game going as well. And that would be insane to someone who was watching the league 40 years ago and had not watched since. That is a really fundamental change, and I think it informs a lot of the conversations we're having right now. You know, why are running backs not getting paid as much? Well, part of that is because quarterbacks are a bigger portion of the run game than they ever were before, especially near the goal line. So running backs can't, you know, it's harder to have that 20-touchdown, 25-touchdown season that a guy like Sean Alexander or LaDainian Tomlinson might have had earlier in their career. Why is scoring down? Well, quarterbacks are running the ball more often. Teams are running the ball more often. And so the clock's moving faster. In week one, there's about an average of about 60 plays per game for either side. 4 years ago, that was 64 plays per game. That might not sound like a big difference, but over the course of the full season, that's like missing an entire game's worth of snaps. You know, that is the difference between the fastest team in the league and the slowest team in the league on a week-to-week basis. So, you know, we're seeing scoring go down because teams are running fewer plays. The clock is running more often after these run plays.
Right.
You know, and I think in the big picture, Kevin, and we can talk about this all day, but in the big picture, the thing I would say is you think about high school games and college games and how many quarterbacks in the past would have been moved off of the position because you would have said, hey, you're a great athlete, but you're not a quarterback. Go play wide receiver. You know, go play running back. Go play cornerback. Go play a different position because you're not going to be considered a quarterback at the NFL level because, you know, a significant portion of what you do is running the football and they're not going to let you do that. That is no longer the case. Teams are going to recruit for that at the college level and they're going to do that at the pro level. I mean, pro offenses look more like high school and college offenses now than they did 30, 40 years ago. And so that to me is a really fundamental shift. It's going to change how players are coming through the league. And, you know, I wouldn't be shocked 10, 20 years from now if it was more like half the league had running quarterbacks. I don't think this is a fad. I think this is not going away. I think it's becoming more an essential part of offenses, especially as defenses now are trying more and more to take away big passing plays.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting to hear you talk about it, because in 2012, being kind of, you know, front and center as fans to the pistol being implemented, the quarterback being not just a part of a true dual threat quarterback, not just in the red zone like Carolina had run with Cam Newton the year before, but, you know, they're lining up in the pistol first and 10 from the 20, and they're, as Mike always explained, Mike Shanahan used to always explain, this is 11-on-11 football, and he explained the idea that when the quarterback hands the ball off to the running back, you've got 9 blocking 11, you know, and the runner is the 10th. With the quarterback, there's a distinct advantage, and you just used the word fad. I mean, if I had a nickel for every person in 2012 that said, this is the wildcat, or this is just the latest fad, it'll get figured out. And I remember Shanahan saying this. He's like, oh, no, no, this is here for good. This is a major advantage in the run game, and everybody benefits, including the running backs and the quarterbacks, through play action when they are presented as a run threat. But here's and I want you to kind of talk about, you know, the conclusion to all this, because since 2011, 2012, and you say 2018, but if you go back to 2012, when you really had quarterbacks being used as designed runners and option runners in the game, we've only had one of those teams reach the Super Bowl. It was the 49ers that year with Kaepernick. And it's been a problem for Baltimore, as an example, if they're behind and they have to throw the football. So the question is, can one of these teams go through the postseason and win the Super Bowl?
Well, I mean, look at the Eagles, right? I mean, Jalen Hurts came within a couple drives of winning the Super Bowl. I mean, that would have been, and he was the best player on the field in that game to me. I think Chris Jones actually was the best player.
He was as a passer, though, that day.
Right, and that's the thing. I think you have to have both. I think it gives you I go back to what Kyle Shanahan typically does with his offenses, which is he wants to keep his quarterback out of third and long drop back passing game as much as possible, because that's when you get the exotic defenses. That's when you get, you know, the looks that you're not expecting. That's when you get creative coverages. Like, you want to keep your quarterback out of that. And so he drafted Trey Lance, who was a guy who, with very brief time as Niners quarterback, was going to be a heavy play action quarterback run game, staying out of third and long, because he had incredible athleticism and he also changed the numbers for you on offense. And I think, you know, with Jalen Hurts is probably the best example, where, yes, he was part of the quarterback run game, but yes, he also threw at a high level. And I think for Lamar, you know, there's a lot of things that come into play. I don't think that kind of quarterback innately can't be a successful quarterback throwing the football in situations where you need to get completion. I just think, you know, that's a question about Lamar and his ability. I think there's questions, of course, about, you know, we've had the conversations about the offense, about the receivers. You know, does he have that great receiver? I mean, if Zay Flowers doesn't fumble, do we think about that team differently? To me, I think, is, you know, we've only had a couple of seasons where the Ravens were playing at a high enough level. I think Lamar deserves that criticism as much as I think Lamar is a Hall of Fame player. But, you know, I think I would put that on individual players, not on that archetype as a whole. But I do think until someone does it, I think it's a very fair question to ask.
Well, and there's also the possibility that you can front run your way through a postseason, you know, as a one seed, playing two games, playing a Super Bowl and never trailing and never really having to be in that situation where you're down two scores and are forced to throw the football. That's always a possibility, too.
Yes. And I think that's a really good point, because you always hear that stat about Lamar. I think he actually broke it last year, but that was that stat about, oh, he's never won a game, he trailed at halftime. What's missing in that conversation is, do you know who the best quarterback in football is at getting a lead at halftime? It's Lamar Jackson. And that's an important skill to have. So, you know, I do think there's valid criticisms to have, but it's so funny. You know, you go back, I went back and I was reading a book from during the offseason in the NFL about like the 1960s, like 60s, 70s. And it was talking about Tarkenton. And it was like, man, when are one of these running quarterbacks ever going to win a Super Bowl? And it's just like, you know, our idea of what a running quarterback is changes, right? Like, if you brought Patrick Mahomes to the 70s, you'd be like, man, this guy, you know, he feels like he's from a different planet. And yet, you know, he's been successful. So I really think it's about, you know, it's a valid criticism, but I do think the lines there are so thin and we sort of shift them a bit. So I'll be intrigued to see. You know, I think with Lamar, the criticism is totally valid. And then everyone knows it, right? I mean, even the Ravens know it. If you're in that locker room, if you're in that building, you have to know, okay, we're going to be an 11-12 win team if Lamar is healthy, and yet nothing really matters for us until we get to the postseason. And that might struggle to keep you motivated during the regular season. I don't know. It's a really unique situation, I think, there really versus anywhere else in football.
Give me the one guy from the past, okay, let's not go 90s, let's go earlier than 90s, would have been perfect for this day and age and the way football's played.
Oh, gosh, this is a tough question. I was born in 84, so I have to go back to my Tarkenton, I feel like, is speeding because I keep mentioning him,
sure.
But I feel like Tarkenton is a thing where, you know, ability to extend plays, ability to work out of structure. I mean, when you go back and watch games, and there's actually a guy on YouTube who's incredible, it's a guy on YouTube who goes back and he will, like, basically upscale old games into HD. And,
oh, love him. I watch him all the time.
Right. And, like, you know, you go back and a lot of things are revealed. You know, it's a lot of nostalgia about, like, oh, the game used to be better in all these ways. In some ways, it was better. In a lot of ways, it was not. And, you know, seeing Tarkenton play and just seeing his ability to create out of structure, I think is something that, you know, you train for now in a way you didn't train for it back then. You know, how many teams in the 70s were doing scramble drills? How many teams in the 70s had wide receivers who were, you know, great on double moves, who were great creating after the route was over? You know, frankly, a lot of teams didn't have many wide receivers on the field. And if you're running a scramble drill and you have four wide receivers on the field, it's going to look a lot better than when you have two tight ends and a fullback. So, you know, to me, I think Tarkenton is the guy where, you know, obviously
that's a good one
for sure, but plug him in.
No, that's like a really good one from that era. I mean, I could so see him, you know, running zone read. Now, he was a little guy.
Yeah.
You probably wouldn't want quarterback counter or quarterback sweep, but he would have been phenomenal. You know who would have been excellent, actually, and I've talked to him about this before. Joe Theismann was not only a good runner, he was a really good ball handler, and he would have been excellent in that kind of an offense as well. All right, I'm running out of time here, so I do want to get your thoughts on Jaden Daniels and Washington's offense so far through three games.
So exciting. I mean, obviously, when you put up the numbers he did, make the pass he did, you know, in that game, nothing I'm going to say that's going to poke holes in that. He was incredible. I think what I like from him is I'm seeing him transcend the offense. You know, there's some stuff in the offense, some of the screens I don't love. There hasn't been a lot of verticality from week to week. It was better last week, I think. I think last week was the best game plan they had, and they were also protecting really well, and so that gave Jaden Daniels more time to work with. But, you know, it feels like it isn't just about Jaden Daniels creating out of structure. It isn't just Jaden Daniels making magic happen. I think there's moments where that happens, but I think he's working well within the structure of the offense. He's working through his progression, not just, you know, I'm going to look at one guy and then I'm going to tuck in and run. And there's something wrong with that in a vacuum. Like, if you get 10 yards, great. But I think we're seeing him grow more comfortable within the context of the offense. And then he has those moments where he can transcend, the moments where, you know, Terry McLaurin's going to say, hey, I'm going to be open. I'm going to run a set or go, get me the football. And he can make those throws. He can take those hits. You want to see him protect himself more. We saw a slide, I think a really good slide, actually, against the Bengals. Yeah. But, you know, a little more protection when he's running would be helpful. When he's on the sidelines, Lamar is the master at this. Lamar is so good at avoiding big hits. I think that would be nice, but, you know, I think you can't be anything but thrilled about what Jaden Daniels has done so far. I think you're seeing a very accurate quarterback, a smart quarterback, a quarterback who he looks like he's the furthest along of these rookies in this class by a considerable margin, which I think is really exciting.
So what do you think it means for the team this year? I mean, there's a lot of focus on down the road. I mean, they're 2-1 with a chance to get to 3-1 right now. What kind of year can they have?
They could be a playoff team. I mean, Kevin, I wrote about this before the year when I was talking about the team's likely to improve. And I said this, and I said it for anybody, you know, who has a situation like this. The most likely factor when it comes to teams making sort of dramatic leaps immediately is improvements to head coaching and improvements to quarterback. And we'll see about Dan Quinn. I think Dan Quinn's a good coach. I don't want to insult Ron Rivera. I think Ron Rivera, you know, maybe a little past his peak, but I think certainly not a bad coach. But Jaden Daniels is a major upgrade. And when you have that quarterback upgrade, not only does it make the players around you better, but it also makes I think a lot of decisions for your team easier. I think it makes a lot of your processes easier. It changes the way you can coach because you can be more aggressive on defense. You can trust that, you know, your running game is going to be fine. You don't have to have as good of an offensive line. Like, C.J. Stroud made so many players on that Houston offense look better last year and made the defense look better last year. So if Jaden Daniels is this guy, maybe not the guy he was last week because that was incredible, but maybe, you know, the guy who's been in totality this season, in a division where the Cowboys don't look great, the Giants are a bad football team. I don't think the Eagles look great. I don't know how you feel about them, but they are not look great to me this year. I mean, this is a wide open division, and Washington could very easily be this year's version of the Houston Texans.
I actually think the Eagles are better this year. I think Barkley just alone makes them.
Barkley's great, no question.
A much better team. Real quickly, on the five undefeateds, if we take KC and Buffalo out of the equation, because, of course, they are contenders, Minnesota, Seattle, Pittsburgh, if I told you one of those has a legit shot to get to the Super Bowl, which one is it?
I think I would say Seattle. And
really?
It is. Yeah. Pittsburgh, I mean, they all have quarterbacks you have questions about, but I think Geno Smith is the best of those quarterbacks, the most accurate of those quarterbacks. I think they can run the football when they have Kenneth Walker, who, you know, obviously missed the past couple of weeks, but they were very run heavy week one. And I believe in Mike McDonald. And his ability to break down your protections, his ability to create free rushers, his ability to get more out of your guys than you had from the prior regime or the prior coaching staff, I think is legitimate. I mean, so many players in Baltimore, not just, you know, Kyle Hamilton, not just Nadeem Adebike, young guys who were drafted really high, and the Ravens do a great job of developing those guys. But someone like Jadeveon Clowney, I mean, someone like Kyle Van Noy, guys who were on the street in midseason, you know, like they looked like stars in that defense.
Good
and he has a lot of talent there to work with. Pete Carroll, they drafted a lot on the defensive side of the football, and they look significantly better. And I think they're going to be better as the year goes along. They played a pretty easy schedule, to be fair, but that division looks very questionable. The Rams banged up, the Cardinals, I think they've been better than people expect. The Niners banged up with injuries as well. The NFC, I think I'd go for an NFC team over an AFC team in general, but maybe this is me having a lot of faith in Geno. To me, Geno is one of the three most accurate quarterbacks in all of football, and I think if you have a running game for him, he's going to be just fine.
You're so right. I mean, he's always been able to sling it. I mean, even when he wasn't playing and wasn't, you know, and thought to be done, just like, you know, Andy Dalton and Sam Darnold and, you know, all these guys that we should never really give up on. But Geno Smith's always been able to throw the football. That's one thing he could do.
Yeah.
I love talking to you. I appreciate it. Thanks, Bill.
Anytime.
Yep. Bill Barnwell, everybody, at Bill Barnwell on X on Twitter. All right, time for final score predictions with a footnote. You want to go first?
Sure, I'd love to go first. I loved what I saw on Monday. I think them scoring every single possession was insanity. I do not think that continues. I mean, it would be nuts. If they score every single possession again on Sunday, we should be dancing in the streets come Monday morning. So I do not think that's going to happen. I think this game is going to go a little sideways. I like Arizona to win it, though I do think the over smashes. So I'm going to say Arizona 28, Washington 25. My footnote is that Jaden Daniels once again looks really good and has three passing touchdowns.
All right. On Monday night, you picked them to win. And I picked them to lose on a walk-off field goal 30-27. I think that's some good mojo for me to pick them to lose by three again. So I'm going Arizona 34, Washington 31 in overtime on a, you know, a field goal that they get. Well, God, man, that would mean that Washington didn't do anything with their drive. Or it meant, yeah. I'll go Arizona 37, Washington 31 in overtime, which means Washington never got the ball in overtime. Because that's only a playoff rule where you get the shot after. We saw that in the Super Bowl. I think the footnote is Brian Robinson Jr. over 100 yards in this game rushing. Going to pick him to kind of lose close games and see if that works for a while. Back on Monday. Enjoy the football weekend. Chris Russell's up next.